Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Well, Nate, I can't believe I'm about to do this, but I will go ahead and start the show tonight talking about Dolph Ziggler rather than Brock Lesnar. This is a weird sentence to say, but in the main event, Dolph Ziggler walks out, and nobody knows why he's there. The commentary team is frantically trying to figure out what Dolph Ziggler is doing down there, and in the end, he prevents Theory from cheating to win the match, and then lays him out and stands over him at the end of the show. A bit of a strange little moment, just given just the circumstances that it's Dolph Ziggler. He's, you know, habitually a heel. Theory's already, you know, involved with Bobby Lashley and the Money in the Bank, and yet here comes Ziggler with hey, you know, what about me? So what did you make of that? I think there's a lot of different angles to go. I think it's probably, at least in my eyes here, 9 minutes removed, it seems to me that they want to add Ziggler into this United States Championship match at SummerSlam, so Lashley or Theory don't have to do the job. Is that all this is, or is this something else?
You know, it's funny because it's funny you started it off this way about saying, you know, you can't believe you're about to talk about Dolph Ziggler in the main event of Raw. It wasn't that long ago on PWT Talks NXT, we were saying, I can't believe we're about to talk about Dolph Ziggler in the main event of NXT, or even just on NXT, or as NXT champion for that matter. So it's funny because a lot of those same things were going through my head. There's a lot of some similar parallels between him coming down to NXT and like his first the first time he showed up down in NXT, anyway, that first night and tonight, just kind of like mysterious, didn't really say anything, had a little bit of involvement, but yeah, the only thing that could kind of cross my mind too is that, you know, obviously they do want to put him in the United States Championship picture somehow. And what you brought up is if him kind of maybe taking the pin, so the other two don't have to, kind of makes sense. I mean, Bobby Lashley, he's especially since he's gone face. I don't want to say he's not like as believable, but at least to me, when he's a babyface, he's not. He's just so much better as a heel. He's much more of a monster and a believable one as a heel. So he loses a little bit for me when he's a babyface. So you want to, at least in my mind, you want to keep him strong by not having him take a pin or a loss or anything like that, if possible. And Austin Theory, it looks like he's to steal a phrase from Cameron Grimes, he's going to the moon. So I don't think you'd want to see him lose either. So it kind of makes sense. It makes at least the most sense to me is to kind of where the direction for this angle may go. But I'm intrigued. I like Dolph Ziggler, especially after his run down at NXT. I really enjoyed that. So I've kind of been enjoying the things he's been doing lately. So I'm kind of intrigued to see kind of how he fits into this picture going forward.
Yeah, I mean, look, like it's I'm a Dolph Ziggler fan too, and it's, you know, it's he's a good worker. He's been around for a long time. What I don't like about this angle is that it's just I feel like his involvement just kind of gives away the finish here, because frankly, you know, the WWE audience is just conditioned to see Dolph Ziggler in that role, and then you add into that the randomness of him being involved in this at all anyway. I think their project, you know, for that feud going, you know, for however many weeks we've got left here, couple, you know, what, 20 days, is to try and make Dolph Ziggler like a viable candidate to potentially win that match. So that going into it, it doesn't seem, or it's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to take the pin, whether it's from Lashley or whether it's from Theory, either way. But, you know, I think if you do this angle, give it some juice, get him on the microphone, let him talk a little bit. You know, like you got to try to make it somewhat of a mystery, even though it might not be. Otherwise, I think the angle is going to fall really flat. And I think it, you know, it could end up hurting, as you mentioned, Lashley and Theory, by kind of just being involved in something that's so obvious on the second biggest show of the year when, like you said, Lashley's got, you know, whether he's better as a heel or babyface or not, he's still a top star on Raw and a show that needs star power. And like you said, Theory is a, you know, an up-and-comer who, you know, is getting a big push right now. And so I don't think you want him around something that's a dud either. So, you know, I think they're kind of playing with fire with this, Nate, but it's certainly a fun talking point because it's kind of a, I don't want to say shocking angle, but an unexpected angle.
For sure. Definitely unexpected. I certainly wasn't expecting to see Dolph Ziggler come out. He hasn't been in the picture for a little while now, in WWE, period. I don't remember how long it's been, but I feel like it's been at least a couple months, if not longer. And so I wasn't really even thinking about him. He hasn't been involved in this angle. Hearing the music was intriguing, at least. But I do kind of agree. They're playing with where you're saying they're playing with fire, because that was kind of the problem with him down in NXT. Now, I started buying into him partly because NXT 2.0, where it's become developmental, a lot of the people that I'm watching down in NXT, they're not the greatest on the mic and things like that. That they're still learning and, you know, obviously building those skills. So the talent on the mic isn't there. Dolph Ziggler, I mean, obviously he's not only been in the business for a long time, but I mean, he's fantastic on the mic. So I started buying into him and down there, but a lot of people were just like, it's Dolph Ziggler. Like, why am I going to get excited about Dolph Ziggler? We've seen him lose a million times, you know? But I did like the fact at least they let him bring the title up to Raw and things like that to kind of promote the brand and everything, but that's neither here nor there at the moment. So.
Well, I think down in NXT, I think he did pop a little bit because, you know, like they're, like you mentioned, like they're learning down there. And like, I think just, you know, you see a guy in that environment and, you know,
totally stood out.
Stand out, like, because he's got so much more experience and he should, you know, kind of be really intriguing to see. But, you know, you really still need that kind of credibility on the main roster. And I think,
of course,
I think they could like heat him up a little bit here to make it relevant. And but clearly the two most important people in this are Theory. I would put him like even a notch above Lashley at this point, just given the push that he's been getting. And I want to make sure we talk about him and Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman from the opening segment, because that was a big segment. So I want to get your take on that. But we'll let the callers drive the ship a little bit here. We'll take a quick pause and set the table for the show, and then open up those phone lines. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering the July 11th, 2022 edition of WWE Monday Night Raw. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Wade. PWTorch.com/GoVIP if you want to check out Wade's rundown of the show. Maybe up a little bit later this week. Wade's out on assignment, but it will be there nonetheless. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. You get Wade's daily Wade Keller hotline, an ad-free version of the website, so many cool podcasts that are ad-free. Give us a shot. I think you'll be really glad that you did. Lots of content going into SummerSlam and then, you know, with AW and All Out after that. So a busy – and then the G1 as well, full coverage of that too. So now's a great time to try us. And again, pwtorch.com/govip for all the information on how to become a VIP member. The other voice you hear tonight is that of Nate Lindberg from PWT Talks NXT on the PW Torch Daily Cast. Nate, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks for joining me tonight.
Exactly, exactly. Always a pleasure, man. I'm glad to be here. Glad that you gave me a shout and said, hey, let's do a podcast tonight. But I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I am one of the co-hosts of PWT Talks NXT on the Daily Cast lineup, as Zach mentioned. We go live usually about 20 minutes or so after NXT gets off the air. Take your calls, take your emails, very similar to the format of this show. We talk about NXT 2.0 and what's going on in that environment. I also do the hits and misses for NXT, which is a column on pwtorch.com that I typically try to get up right before we go live on PWT Talks NXT. So you can check out my take even before I start talking about my take on the show.
Check out that column, everybody. It's a great column. I look forward to it on Wednesday morning, every Wednesday. It's one of the first things I read when I crack open the computer and the office, you know, thinks I'm working. I'm really reading Nate's column. So check that out at pwtorch.com on Wednesday mornings or, you know, Tuesday night before he hits the air. 347-215-8558 is the phone number, 347-215-8558. Press 1 if you want to get on the show and talk Monday Night Raw. We'll also make sure, Nate, I want to ask a couple questions near the end, if time permits, on some NXT happenings this week as well. But we'll get to that hopefully a little later. If you don't want to chat with us tonight, but you still have some contributions to the show, you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I've got the email open here, and we'll keep that monitored as we go. But we'll start off today with 410, and I think this is Reverend Keith from Baltimore. Reverend Keith, thanks for calling. What did you think of Monday Night Raw?
Good evening, Zach. Thank you so much for the welcome. Nate, it's always good to talk to you. I thought Raw was okay. The finish was interesting, as you just alluded to. We've seen another transformation or evolution of the Dolph Ziggler character. I guess this is number 101, maybe, Nate.
I think that might be right.
Yeah, he's been heel, baby. But it brought an interesting dynamic to the finish. Now, I know you said that it muddied the waters a little bit, Zach, but I think that they're going to have Theory feud with Dolph after he concludes his feud with Bobby Lashley. Now, does this mean that Theory will cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase after the SummerSlam match? Maybe, maybe not. But they need to give Theory someone that he can work well with. I can see the chemistry between he and Dolph, and Dolph can wrestle a broomstick and make the broomstick look good. So I can see that feud shaping up, and they may be positioning Theory for cashing in, because it looks like they're going to have him lose a lot and then cash in, which is always the norm. You know, the person who is about to cash in always loses like a month of matches prior. So what are your thoughts on them perhaps having him cash in at SummerSlam or a Clash at the Castle, I think it's September 1 in the UK, and then maybe just, you know, wrestling a variety of opponents?
So, I mean, here's the thing. Like, and I guess let's take this opportunity to talk about Theory a little bit, Nate, and Keith, and I'll throw back to you in a second. But you bring up a topic with Theory at the center of it, and so I think it's a good time to touch on him. I liked his work tonight quite a bit. I thought he did not look out of place on the stage with Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar. I thought he kind of eliminated most of the silliness, to be honest, and really cut like this more serious heel promo that was one of his better promos on since being kind of called up to the main roster, and certainly since his push has been going on here. So I think that was like a positive sign that, you know, that the push he's getting is warranted, at least for right now, when you take into account just the wrestling stuff, not the, you know, the outside of the ring stuff and issues that he certainly has. But from a like just work perspective, like I was impressed with that. I thought he held his own. You know, I didn't think, you know, with Brock Lesnar out there, Nate, like you can really kind of shrink in the moment, and it's not a very difficult thing to do because he's such a big presence. And I realized they weren't standing next to each other in the ring, but this was a bit of a moment for me anyway, going like, okay, I think this, you know, is worth, you know, the push that we're seeing is worth it given what he's delivered so far. So Nate, take that, your thoughts on that opening promo, and then we'll get into Keith's point about Money in the Bank right after that.
Sure. So I've been, you know, watching Austin Theory. Well, I guess now Theory. I keep doing that. I keep calling
it. I do too. It's really bad.
It's so hard. It's so hard. So I'm probably going to keep doing it. So whatever. But I've been watching him since, you know, he kind of debuted down in NXT, and I wasn't super impressed with him, but he wasn't really somebody that was on my radar at first. And then he started getting involved with Johnny Gargano in The Way, you know, Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae and all that. And he was playing his character so well that I was just so annoyed by him week after week after week. And finally it like dawned on me that I'm like, okay, wait a minute. I'm supposed to be annoyed by, like, he's doing this. He's doing his job. He's basically doing his job. And he really progressed with his character work in NXT much better than I would say higher than average. Let's put it that way. You know, definitely higher than average, you know, in how his mic work and everything progressed. I think tonight, as like you said, this was like a moment for Austin Theory, but it was also kind of a moment for us, as the audience, to look at Austin Theory in a bit of a different light. He really did, like, he looked like he belonged with, you know, everybody out there. Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar, they're legends in the business at this point. I guess Paul Heyman has been for a while, Brock Lesnar too, but still, they're legends in this business, and they felt like they belonged out there. He felt like he belonged aside those guys out there. He has a presence. He has some charisma, or a lot of charisma. Not only that, he can wrestle. He's great in the ring, so he's believable. You don't just get somebody that can talk, and then he gets in the ring and he disappoints you. So as far as his in-ring work, everything that involves his character and all of that is awesome. Yeah, he's got this stuff going on outside the ring, and it makes it really hard for me to get into him. I don't want to necessarily open up that can of worms, but at least strictly from, you know, wrestling standpoint and all of that, I'm really high on him. I have been for a while. There does seem to be a lot of Austin Theory hate around him, and I don't know if that necessarily stems from everything going on outside the ring that he's, you know, and all of that, or if it's just kind of almost like go away heat at this point. But I think that's what they're kind of going for, that they're trying to build a heel to maybe eventually switch, turn face, something along those lines. But I'm on the Austin Theory train. Definitely on the Austin Theory train. So yeah.
As Will said, and I am too. Like I think, you know, he's got to keep going, and he's got to keep delivering. And he has to, you know, he still has to have, I think, that, you know, main event level championship match. But you know, this is not the end of the push. This is the beginning. And so far so good. Man, it gets tricky with that Money in the Bank, though. Like, it really gets tricky because I think, like, in normal circumstances, when you see a guy like Theory being pushed the way he is, he gets the Money in the Bank briefcase, you know, like, he's on a trajectory, much like Seth Rollins was in 2015. I think their pushes are very similar at the moment, and they're playing similar heels as well. But the issue at hand that I see as far as the cash-in goes in regards to Reverend Keith's point is Roman Reigns holds both of those titles. And I know that Theory is out there saying that he's going to cash in at the end of SummerSlam when both Brock and Roman are beat to shreds and they're, you know, they're incapacitated. Here comes Theory. He's calling his shot. But I don't know, Nate. I'm still not buying it just because of the other side of the coin, which means you got to pin Roman Reigns. And whether it's Theory that's pinning Roman Reigns or, you know, Lesnar, so that Theory's pinning Lesnar, like at some point you're going to have to pin Roman Reigns unless they do something tricky with, okay, it's going to be for one belt only. And, you know, I guess then I digress and would have a different opinion. But if things go just like they are today, Reigns has to get pinned. And I just think it's too early to play that card. I think it still's got a lot of money behind it. And I don't think you want to kind of ruin that moment and what that moment could mean for somebody like Theory down the road on like a random, like Money in the Bank style pin and cash in. So that's where I'm at. I'm still not convinced. They've got 2 more weeks or 3 more weeks left to go, Nate, but where are you on the cash in thing?
The only like scenario that I can think of where Roman wouldn't have to get pinned is if he did like the Seth Rollins WrestleMania cash in where he inserts himself into the match and it becomes a triple threat.
Yeah, true.
That's the only thing I can think of. And even that, when, you know, he pins Brock Lesnar, you know, whether it's clean or, you know, Roman gets a spear or a Superman punch or whatever and knocks Lesnar down and Theory capitalizes, like you could do that. However, that was kind of how Seth Rollins won, if I'm not mistaken.
That's exactly how he won.
Yeah, sure. That's what I thought. My memory's not what it used to be, but but that's what I thought. So, you know, that it's literally just like kind of a copycat of you know the Seth Rollins cash in. So I'm not really super sold on that. What I want to see for him is him tease this, you know, maybe like get in their heads or whatever, and then come up with some sort of a reason or excuse or something as to why he didn't do it. Or maybe he gets involved, right? He hits somebody with the, you know, the Money in the Bank briefcase or whatever. Yeah. I haven't quite thought out the scenario yet. You know, at least in terms of Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, but he gets involved somehow, but he doesn't actually cash in. I personally, and we haven't seen one of these in a while, I want to see him hold on to that Money in the Bank briefcase for a little bit. Because like I said a little earlier, he's annoying and he can be annoying. And I feel like they need to kind of capitalize on that for him right now. They kind of capitalize on that annoying little heel and have him hold the Money in the Bank briefcase for a lengthy period of time, whether it's, you know, to WrestleMania, after WrestleMania, what have you, but have him hold on to it for a little bit. It'll let people start to latch on to him a little bit more. I don't want to say forget about the allegations or whatever against him, but I don't necessarily like that, but I guess maybe that, you know, that's their, you know, train of thought anyway, but it kind of gives them a little bit of time for that. But it also allows the fans to just start to latch on to him. He can build stories. He can beat people, you know, beat like, you know, upper mid card talent, even maybe a couple, you know, main event guys on his way to cashing in the Money in the Bank briefcase against whoever is, whether it's the Undisputed Champion, WWE Champion, or Universal Champion, however it winds up playing out, you know, in a few months, you know, down the line or whatever, but have him cash in then, because you won't have to necessarily now put him in the ring against Brock Lesnar and or Roman Reigns. I don't feel like he is at that level yet. I feel like he's progressing great, but he's not at that top main event level, I think, in the eyes of the fans. He's not believable, I guess is the word I'm looking for, to go out there and maybe beat AJ Styles or you know, somebody else like that on the top of the card, but not Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. So I don't want to see him waste that cash in right now. Unless all of a sudden, you know, they pulled the trigger on him and he did, but I feel like it would be a better, at least in my mind, it might be a better idea to book it out so he has money in the bank briefcase for, you know, a handful of months and then cashes it in against whoever's the champion and he doesn't have to necessarily get involved with both Reigns and Brock at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's an important point. Like, they're, you know, first of all, I don't think they really know what they want to do with those two titles at this point. So Roman has them. It makes sense because he's, you know, the head of the table and all this stuff, the biggest star, and he's just been on this crazy run, so I think it makes sense. But, you know, all reporting indicated that it was that those belts being unified was not a long-term thing. And so, you know, you kind of have that up in the air. You've got Cody also up in the air, potentially. Like, he, you know, he's on the quest for the title too. And I think, you know, you want to play Cody versus Reigns down the road, play that card, like, while it's still hot. And then, of course, you've got Roman Reigns and The Rock, potentially, for WrestleMania. That's, you know, still on the table until it's not, I guess. And so that all just seems like really good business. And the way around that is, like you said, to just let that stuff play out, let theory kind of, like, build that rapport with fans one way or the other, negative or most likely, and then you do the cash-in later on. Keith, to throw it, to kind of take it full circle, I think that you can certainly, like, if they pulled the trigger and they went with Theory and he cashed in and he's got the title, like, you know, it would be, like, pretty par for the course to see WWE put, you know, Ziggler in that role, somebody that Theory can just beat. I think that'd be, like, such a severe downgrade opposite, like, Lesnar and Reigns. But that doesn't mean WWE couldn't do it. So I want to make sure to touch on that point, in that he's a suitable kind of opponent for that, especially if it's like a TV match. But in the end, though, I think I'm not buying that premise that cash isn't even going to happen at this point. So I'll throw it back to you. We said a lot there, Keith. Thanks for hanging. Any follow-up on what we discussed?
Yes, I just wanted to reiterate about 4 years ago, when Evolve Wrestling was still around, I watched a young Austin Theory go toe-to-toe in a nice promo against J.D. Drake, who is now in AEW. And he showed me signs then that he was going to be a top-tier talent. And I can see that the trajectory that he is on, that he will, in fact, be a very popular babyface in the years to come. Just like, it's kind of like John Cena, you know, how he was the doctor of Thuganomics. And then eventually, you know, when he made that transition into a baby back in 2005, you know, that was the rest of history, you know. And I'm not saying he'll be the next John Cena, as a lot of people predict, but I can see that he has all the tools. He has a good body. He has charisma. And like you guys alluded to, and I was looking at Dan Doucette's column tonight on covering Raw, and all three of you were saying the same thing, that he looked very comfortable out there going toe-to-toe against the likes of Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman, and everyone else that was out there at the top of the show. And that was a good sign, because I had never seen Theory like that. So the best is yet to come for this young man, and I think that he will probably hold on to the briefcase beyond SummerSlam, but a good likely scenario, or a greater likely scenario, would be at Clash at the Castle. If, let's say, if he tried to cash in or insert himself like Seth did at WrestleMania in a match with Drew and Roman. You see what I'm saying? He could do it that way. That's a possibility. Or just let him keep it for a while, you know, just continue to tease. But I just don't want to see him cash in and fail. And that's what a lot of prognosticators, especially on Twitter, are saying, that he'll be one of the ones who cash in and fail. But do you guys believe that he will successfully cash in, or will he fail?
Right now, I'd say that he will cash in successfully. It's just, it may not be for a long time, but we've seen what happens to people that, like, have short runs with the briefcase, cash in and don't succeed. I mean, John Cena aside, Corbin, like, that really hurt his momentum at that point. Now, and he's not even getting the same kind of push that Theory's getting, or he wasn't getting the same kind of push that Theory's getting. So I think that when it happens, it's, you know, he'll be successful. And, you know, if they do it in the right spot, like if they do it at some point, you know, Theory over Cody or something like that down the road. Like, there's some big heat in that if they tell both those stories right, Nate. So I would plant my flag in the yes, he'll be successful camp right now, a couple weeks in.
I think he's going to be a successful cash in. I don't think it's going to be – if it is a fail, if he does fail cashing it in, it needs to be a spectacular fail. And I don't mean that in, like, it sucks and it's awful and it's going to hurt him. I mean it in exactly the opposite way. It needs to be something that gives him momentum to then keep rolling on and eventually capture, you know, the, again, whether it's a WWE title, Universal title, or Undisputed title. But that's kind of where my mind is going. I'm kind of in agreement with you guys. It's got to be a successful cash in, with that one caveat of, if it is a fail, in my opinion, it's got to do something to give him momentum and not take it away from him.
Yeah. Yep. Keith, thank you. Appreciate it. Good topics as usual, man.
Yeah, Keith, definitely good talking with you, man, as always.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call, and have a good show.
Yeah, appreciate it, Reverend Keith. Thank you. All right, we'll keep it going here. Let's see. 619. You are up next. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hey, this is William from San Diego. How are you guys doing?
Good, William. Good to talk to you. What'd you think of Monday Night Raw?
I thought it was filler for the most part. You know, to be honest, I was just kind of watching it in the background, not really paying much attention to it. So maybe there's stuff that I missed that was crucial. But from what I could tell, just watching, you know, out of the corner of my eye, it seemed like filler for the most part. I want to talk about the opening segment more because, you know, it's just sorry about that loud car going by. It just seems like just a year ago when Brock Lesnar came back, it was this huge, exciting thing. And, you know, I never thought that they would come, that I would embrace him again as a babyface. And certainly a lot of people did, too. He seemed like he was coming out there during that Roman feud and just having a blast, you know, having the time of his life being a babyface and being embraced by you know, audiences all around the U.S. as they were touring. But, you know, tonight, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but it seemed like he came out and their reaction wasn't what it used to be. Just where I'm sitting at home, I didn't feel that same excitement myself. I just felt kind of this sense of, oh, man, here we go again. I was getting that same feeling, you know, I used to get and other people used to get when he was a heel holding that championship hostage. The person who would show up every couple of months, even though he was the champion, he would only show up a couple of months, collect a paycheck, and call it a day. So, yeah, I mean, we only have, like, a couple weeks to go till SummerSlam. And I thought the dialogue, the back and forth between Brock and Heyman tonight was pretty bad from what I heard. Again, wasn't paying full attention. So I don't know what you guys think of the way they try to build the match tonight. And do you think with the, you know, the amount of time we have that they'll get to a point where there's some excitement and not so much a lot of people groaning as there are right now about the match?
Great question. I'm definitely higher on Brock Lesnar tonight than you seem to be, and Paul Heyman too. But I'll take it from two angles. Like, one, I do think that the reaction was a little bit, like, the crowd reaction to Brock tonight was a little more tempered than we've seen in his babyface role. But I think, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's just, it's not as fresh anymore. Like, we're about a year into this. And, you know, for a while there, it was like really fun and fresh to see Brock in this babyface role, smiling, being happy, high-fiving the fans. Like, that, you know, that was interesting to see because we hadn't seen really that Brock at all. Even when he was a babyface his first run, that was not the character. So that was fun to watch. But, you know, it's just gone on a lot right now. And you add into that that the only opponent that Lesnar has really had during that run has been Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. Like, yes, he's kind of got physical with other people and beat up some guys. I get that. But really, like, the sole focus of Brock has been Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman. And we're still there. And so I think, you know, Nate, that's just going to naturally wear on people. Even if you have good performances, which I thought they did tonight. Like, you got Paul Heyman out there selling his butt off, trying to, you know, inject one more Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns match with some kind of energy. And he's really, he's promising just absolute destruction in that match. Like, I thought Heyman really laid it on thick as far as what Brock's capable of and the things that Brock has overcome throughout his career, like the streak, et cetera. But then obviously he pivoted back to that won't happen against Roman Reigns. And, you know, this, Nate, really is the only card I think they can play. It's just this mass destruction of a match. Play that card, bill it as, like, the real last time, I suppose. But outside of that, they don't have very many different directions that they can take the feud to build interest. And so they're stuck in a lot of ways. And I think this is was kind of put together in at the last minute anyway. But so I give it like a high like marks for the performance, but I still don't think it's going to make anybody roll their eyes less that we're going to see this match again at SummerSlam. I think that's going to be a really tough putt for even somebody who's as great as Paul Heyman to make.
And now for Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns, number 79.
Right.
I mean, like, I know. I mean, how many times have we seen this match over and over again? And, you know, for the most part, they do a good job building to their matches, like I said, for the most part, to build intrigue and whatever. But, yeah, we're kind of – I mean, how many times have we seen this match, you know? So, I don't know. There's – yeah, it's been quite a few. There's part of me that, like, I love this version of Brock Lesnar, and it hasn't got old for me yet. So, like, for at least Brock Lesnar, I'm on board with that in his character and whatever. His character right now is like R-Truth for me, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. R-Truth will never ever get old. but yeah, so it is. It's kind of difficult because there have been so many matches where it's just really hard to build intrigue for it and build anything around it. I mean, well, not build anything around it, but at least build the intrigue for it and something around it that people can actually, you know, latch themselves onto. Like, does it necessarily, like, I don't know. I don't necessarily want to see both WWE top titles get basically held hostage by Roman Reigns anymore. Not that I don't think it's been a great run by any stretch of imagination, but it would just kind of be nice to have something a little bit different and maybe see Roman kind of do a bit of a chase for the titles and kind of go a little crazy because maybe, you know, he's losing his place at the head of the table, at least in his mind or something like that. And give somebody else a chance to try and build themselves up. At least, you know, that's kind of like the way I personally feel about it. Then I also don't want to see the titles get held hostage any longer by Brock Lesnar, because how many times have we seen that where, you know, Lesnar has just, I mean, usually it's only been one title, not necessarily both, but where he's, you know, a champion and he doesn't show up for months and then he comes back. And so one show is left without a champion. So I don't necessarily want to see that either. It's not like super intriguing to me. I'm still gonna watch it because, hey, we're wrestling fans and we do that. I'm still gonna watch it, and I am kind of looking forward to it in a little bit. But by the same token, I want to see something new and intriguing and just kind of going back to the same old thing. It's one of those things that we've talked about, you know, a million times, is building new stars. And, you know, they keep going right back to Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, just like they always kept going, what the heck was that? Something just fell. I don't know if you guys heard it, but something just fell outside and scared the absolute crap out of me.
I did hear that. Do you need to go check on your house or apartment or condo or whatever?
Well, I'm on the second floor, and there's no easy access out there, so it can wait.
You're okay.
But I don't even remember what I was talking about anymore. Wow, that was weird. I think
we're speaking like in the tune of a lot of fans, where it's like the matches have been okay between Brock and Roman, but not great. The build has been fun for the most part, but they really, if you think about it, they built from SummerSlam to WrestleMania last year. I mean, that's a long story, you know? I mean, it's really a long story. And so when you play it out that long, and I say that with all the compliments in the world. I'm on record saying that feud is one of the best built WrestleMania main events in a while for WWE. But to now play it again, that's where I think you're going to get some of that eye rolling. I thought Brock tonight, though, William was pretty likable. Like it felt really natural in the role out there, like dealing with the fans. I got a kick out of the cowboy hat thing and kind of like him soaking in the reaction that he did get and kind of like tipping his hat to it and thanking the fans. I thought that was a pretty cool moment. And, you know, I don't know if Brock is getting scripted out there. I mean, I'm sure he is to a point, but it doesn't matter because what he sounds like he's cutting off the cuff promos, like with the Three Little Pig thing that he did to Paul Heyman, like that seemed off the cuff. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but he does have, I think, a genuine promo presence where you're like, this is Brock Lesnar, you know, that's him. And I think that's fun to watch. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, there's one thing I wanted to bring up, and I totally forgot regarding that, because we brought up the Brock Lesnar, like his pop tonight. And I once when we started talking about it at the beginning of the question, I honestly could not remember what his pop was. So I went back real quick. I still had my tab open in Chrome and just, you know, watched the pop, and it did seem muted. It compared to like normal, it was kind of a more quiet reaction than I was expecting. And I feel like when he went out and started, you know, did the hat thing and put the hat on the turnbuckle and, you know, said, I don't know, pay them respect because they're so nice or whatever. It like just that instinct to feed it, like, okay, I might have not got the reaction I was expecting. So, all right, let's butter the fans up. Come on. And he didn't do it in a cheesy way. He went out there, he felt it and just went out and like did it. And I thought that was great. And Brock Lesnar is... He's a master of doing that, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, he is, and he didn't say "Welcome to Monday Night Raw" either.
Yeah,
just, you know, talked like not a corporate robot out there. Yeah, good point, Nate. William, back to you. Hopefully, we answered that question. Good question. I don't think you're alone, William, in terms of how you're feeling about Lesnar versus Reigns 76 or 79, whatever it was, Nate.
Well, yeah, I'm just hopeful that, you know, at the end they do something just to, like, inject some more juice into this thing. But speaking of another possible rematch that we've seen a few times, and, you know, we, like I mentioned with the Brock and Roman thing, we only have a couple of weeks to go till SummerSlam. They teased or they seem to all but confirm Becky versus Bianca again tonight for SummerSlam. I want to get your guys' take on the Becky storyline that they're doing, the downward spiral that they were kind of doing. I don't know if that's over and this is like another act in that, or like how this fits into that. Do you guys think this ultimately leads to a babyface turn? I don't know. What do you guys think the conclusion will be? And I'll kind of second part to that is they gave Carmella an out tonight with the whole count out. She won via count out victory against Bianca, so they're probably going to do a rematch next week or in a couple of weeks. And again, I keep bringing this up, the issue of time, that we only have a couple of weeks to go till SummerSlam. Is that really something we want to focus on attention right now? Is Carmella still being in this feud? Unless they're doing a triple threat match, which I would hope not. I don't know. I threw in a couple of things at you guys, so feel free to discuss.
Yeah. So, for me, with the Becky Lynch stuff, and this could very well be the incorrect way to approach this, Nate, but I was starting the analysis of her and what's going on with her. To me, it begins with Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania next year. And I just, you know, until I kind of see something otherwise, like, I think that's where they're going. I think they have Ronda for one more WrestleMania match. I think her contract's up soon after that. And, you know, I think they really butchered the Becky Lynch versus Ronda one-on-one match when it was available to them 3 years ago. But they got a shot at it here, and I don't think they pass on it this time. So I kind of start my analysis with that's where they're going. And if that's where they're going, at some point, yeah, I think she is going to have to turn babyface, and I think she will. And I think we are seeing her on this kind of redemption tour. You know, given that they're likely going to Belair versus Lynch again at SummerSlam, you know, I'm wondering whether, like, they try to use that as a catalyst for a babyface turn, where, you know, Bianca beats Becky Lynch again, and it, like, kind of makes Becky respect Bianca, and they kind of almost, like, handshake it at the end, and then they go from there, and then that's where, you know, the babyface run against Starks for Becky. I just think if they're going with Ronda versus Becky, it's going to be almost it's a fool's errand to try to position Becky Lynch as a babyface in that. And, you know, you got to get there somehow. So I think this is all part of the journey, Nate. I think the match at SummerSlam is a good rematch to have, given that their match was really, really good at WrestleMania. And I think, you know, if they want to book it that way, where that is the start of a babyface turn for Becky Lynch, there's certainly, like, depth of story there between her and Belair to pull that off. So, you know, that's where I'm at on Becky. I think she's kind of treading water a bit until that happens. And, you know, Carmella, I almost wonder, Nate, if they're going to do Becky against Carmella for the title shot, since essentially Becky cost her the championship. So I wonder if that's kind of where they're going in the next couple of weeks. But what did you make of Becky tonight and Carmella's involvement in the women's title picture on Raw?
As far as Carmella goes, it's funny because I didn't even really think about that. Like, she was cost the title tonight. Like, maybe that's the direction they were going to go. It certainly could happen, but it didn't even cross my mind because I was kind of so focused on Bianca and Becky. I think it's a good way for them to go. I mean, I think they've got great chemistry together, and it's going to be, you know, a fantastic match. Becky has certainly seemed like she's been treading water. Like, I like this new Becky character, but at the same time, it's like so eccentric that I don't want to say it's forced, because it doesn't seem like it's forced, but it's the only adjective I can really come up with at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so out there that it's hard to buy into it. Like, it was really easy to buy into the man, right? Or big time Bex or something, right? Like, all of that, like, it was easy to connect with. This character, and maybe that's by design, where she's a heel, is kind of, it's hard to connect with and draw any sort of interest for me. I'm interested because it's Becky Lynch and I like Becky Lynch, but I'm not certainly, like, it hasn't grabbed me. And I feel like a lot of people are kind of in that boat. I think they like Becky Lynch, but this particular character is just kind of like, what? So that's kind of like where I'm at. I do feel like Becky and Ronda is probably the direction for WrestleMania as well. So yeah, that obviously does throw a few, you know, wrenches in here, kind of for other people, kind of where they're going to wind up and whatnot. But at least in the meantime, in the interim, like for, you know, short term, I think that you know, Becky and Bianca is the way that, you know, the way that they're leaning. And I think it's going to be a good direction for them, whether or not it, you know, I don't know necessarily which way they're going to go. I think they could have Becky, like you said, lose, which I think is probably best way to do it. Have her lose and kind of try to go on a bit of a redemption story, not necessarily turn face right away, but kind of start building to that eventual face turn. Because I think, like I said, people just want to, like, I want to cheer Becky, you know, I want to get invested in that story. Like, I loved the man. The man was one of my favorite characters in wrestling in recent memory. She was a phenomenal act. I mean, she obviously was one of the top performers in the company. And that doesn't happen very often where you have a you know, top baby face, you know, top woman baby face in the company. I thought it was fantastic. I really want to see her get back to where she was, you know, before injuries and, you know, motherhood kind of, I feel like, derailed a lot of that momentum. She got some of it when she came back, but I don't feel like she's ever quite been as red hot as she was before, you know, before, I think it was an injury and then she left. Yeah. For pregnancy. So.
Yeah. And I think it also, you know, talking about this, you know, brings up another point, which is, like, what about Bianca Belair? Like, you know, we've been talking about the women's title situation for probably 11, 12 minutes now, and, you know, Belair isn't the focus of our conversation, and it's Becky, and that's kind of the focus, because it feels like that's where they're going with things. Nate, what did you think of Belair tonight in the match, and then just as a star on the show, like, how did she come across to you? Where are you at on her after tonight's outing?
So, I mean, in the match itself, I mean, I thought she was great. I love Bianca Belair in the ring, which is funny because when I first saw her in the Mae Young Classic, I did not like her, and she's really, really grown on me and like proved me wrong. So I'm super happy about that. So yeah, that was, like, match itself was fine. What I didn't like was the finish. I feel like it was stupid babyface. Like, how can you not hear the ref counting? You also, yeah, you're a competitor, and I mean, she's supposed to be the EST, right? Like, that was just such a rookie move, getting counted out because you're in a bit of an argument, you know? So I hated that. Like, that's the one thing I did not like about all of that. But as far as Bianca Belair as, like, a star, oh, yeah, big time. You know, one of the things that, I mean, she loves doing, she loves, you know, being a role model for kids. I mean, at least it's what she talks about, you know, in some of, like, the promotional, you know, corporate fluff stuff that they do. And I think she's a perfect role model for kids. And that's something that the company is certainly looking for, and I feel like they should obviously look for. So I feel like not only can she go in the ring, she's kind of just like that perfect corporate WWE like person, like that company person that is going to give a good image to the company and kind of work for the company to you know, do those outreach things to, you know, for kids. And there's a word I'm looking for and I can't think of.
I'm
charity.
I'm searching for it too as you're talking.
Kind of like charity work and things like that is kind of what I'm looking for, but it's not it. But I think you know what I'm talking about. So there's that, and not only that, but I mean, her husband, Montez Ford, he's also somebody that, you know, there's a lot of talk about in terms of being like that company guy and having an awesome singles run eventually, and, you know, potentially breaking out to be a big star. I think the two of them, power couple. You know, not necessarily in kayfabe, like keep themself, you know, separated or, you know, loosely affiliated, kind of, you know, how they've done in the past. But I think they're, the two of them especially, are going to be around the company for a while, and they have the potential to be major stars.
Good stuff. William, back to you. Any other comments on what we've said or a final topic?
Yeah, one final topic, and then I'll let you guys get to other callers or emailers. seems like, you know, not that there's ever a good timing for someone to get injury, but they had that, you know, that switch in the Judgment Day group, team, whatever you want to call it, where Finn Balor replaced Edge and maybe traded Edge, and it seemed like they were building to something. And then Rhea got injured. I don't know, I just saw them out there tonight, and to me, it seems, and I don't mean this in an emasculating way or anything, not that, you know, I would ever even think that that's, you know, saying that Rhea is the alpha of that group should be taken as an insult to either Priest or Finn Balor, but that was kind of my headcanon or idea going into that group when they first form as this new version we see with Finn Balor, Priest, and Rhea, is that, you know, it just seems that naturally Rhea seemed like the more charismatic one, the one who would most naturally fit into the leader or alpha kind of role. And that's the sense that I got out there when I saw Finn Balor and Priest cutting a promo opposite of the Mysterios. It just seemed like a lot of their weaknesses on the mic were exposed. And not that Rhea is, like, a lot better on the mic, but she does have some intangible charisma that I feel more like inclined to listen when she's talking. So, yeah, I don't think I laid it out as a question or a specific question or anything, but I guess what do you guys think of Judgment Day? How do you think they're faring right now without Rhea in the group? Are you in agreement that Rhea is a big missing piece of the puzzle at this moment, or do you think that they can do without her for a while? Thank you guys for taking my call. Have a good one.
Yeah, William, always a blast to talk to you, man. Thanks for calling. Yeah, Nate, that Judgment Day faction is a thing for sure. I don't.
You can say that again.
Yeah, right. What was with that pose that Priest was doing when they came back from the commercial break? Did you catch that?
I didn't actually. No, I didn't.
Okay, at some point, go back and it's right out of the commercial break, and I think he's in, like, his old, like, bow and arrow pose or something. It's really, really bizarre. It's right before the match, and it's just bizarre. And, like, you know, that's small, and WWE has guys do all sorts of weird poses like that, like, just for TV purposes. But ultimately, though, it's a flat act right now in my eyes. Like, and I don't know that Rhea Ripley could have saved it, but she certainly – most certainly would not have hurt it. So I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but I just think it's an act that's directionless at this point in time. I mean, they're out there with the Mysterios and they're trying to recruit Dominic, but that's not super clear storyline wise. Like, not the fact that they're trying to recruit him, but that Dominic is considering joining them at all. It's like, so it's like the words that are coming out of Judgment Day is like, it seems to me that they're talking about, like, being on the road to convincing this guy that he should join their group, when, you know, Dominic is not acting well enough for that story to resonate, because it just seems like he's blowing him off, is a little bit bewildered, and is siding with his dad. So the story's not working. I don't think there's really a nice chemistry between Priest and Balor. I thought Balor and Rey Mysterio had a really good match tonight. And if they had more time, I think they could have even had a better match. But they worked well, so the match was fine. But yeah, I'm not. I don't see a long shelf life for this. And, you know, it may be one of those things, Nate, that. Yes, Rhea Ripley, maybe she was kind of destined to be the alpha of the group and kind of like the leader of the group. But, you know, sometimes things happen for a reason, and it may be better for her just to not be involved with this right now until it gets a little bit more definition, or when she can come back with some heat behind her and give the faction some relevancy because of her presence there. What do you think?
Yeah, so the positive thing I'm going to say is that Finn Balor and Rey Mysterio did have a great match. Like I'd like to see more of that actually. But yeah, man, Judgment Day, they started out with so much promise. Like I was kind of really pumped about it because I like the dark edge, right? And I kind of like some of those like dark and brooding characters. The Undertaker is one of my favorites, right? So I was really intrigued by it. And just then, as the weeks went on, I'm like, what's going on? This is getting weird. And then all of a sudden, you know, Edge gets thrown out of the group, and now obviously Rhea's. They're directionless. There's been so many changes to the group in such a short period of time. Some of it intentional, some of it not, that it's like, I don't know if anybody is getting behind them right now. I mean, they don't get really much of a reaction. I feel like what they do get is a lot of just go away boos. I don't feel like you said, Finn Balor, I love Finn Balor. I love Damian Priest, but together they don't seem to have any chemistry. You don't really feel like they're a unit. When they're even just standing next to each other, kind of dressed the same and everything, they still don't feel like a unit. In terms of like where they are right now, they're floundering and floundering hard. I am really intrigued by those random vignettes that have been showing up that kind of seem to be leading the Edge, that have, you know, Latino Heat license plate and the medals and all of that stuff. I'm really intrigued to see, I'm sure it is Edge. It makes the most sense. But what that actually means for Edge, I'm super pumped about that. I know that's not necessarily part of what we're talking about, but because Edge is also one of my guys, one of my favorites in wrestling. It has been since I was like a kid. So really intrigued by that. But as far as Judgment Day goes, like they're really floundering. Rhea Ripley, I think I might agree with you. She should probably stay away from this. It's probably kind of a good thing. Cause like I want to see her succeed and be kind of like what she was down in NXT. And I don't feel like she's ever gotten that momentum, on the main roster. And she started to lose that momentum in NXT. I mean, she won the NXT women's title. She defended it. Was it at WrestleMania? She defended on a main roster pay-per-view against Charlotte, or vice versa. She fought for it. I think Charlotte had it. Regardless, it was a big deal down in NXT. I'm forgetting all the details while I'm talking about it here. But she was a big deal down there for a while and started losing momentum before she got called up. And it's she hasn't really regained it. So I feel like when she does come back, she needs some sort of revitalization to give her – like you said, kind of like that steam, that momentum again, whether it be with Judgment Day or not. You know, if they're going to roll with Judgment Day and they're not going to just axe it, which there's part of me that kind of wishes they would just axe it, but I also kind of hate the fact that they always kind of always do that. They just like form these stables and then they're gone right away. So it's like I'd like to see them try a little harder anyway. Whether she comes back with Judgment Day or not, she definitely needs to come back with some momentum. I feel like she would have been a great leader for Judgment Day. You know, not only just being the one woman in the faction, which kind of stands out, you know, and I feel like that would be she could pull it off, be like in that position of power and kind of like sick men on people, you know, especially where they don't do a lot of the male on female violence. I feel like that would kind of help her in the group to kind of make her feel more important rather than, you know, throwing her in a mixed tag match where, you know, she can't necessarily mix it up with everybody else that the rest of the faction's feuding with. So, having her be like the leader of the group, it would make more sense that she'd be standing out and letting the guys do most of the dirty work. So,
Well, first of all, like she posted a kind of a, scary picture the other day with like a monitor on her heart, and she's been out, but there hasn't been much news on what's the issue there. But that picture was kind of a bit jarring, and hopefully she's okay and on the road to recovery. But yeah, we'll see. With the you talked about Edge, are you like do you if it's Edge, do you see that being revealed before SummerSlam, and you're looking at Edge versus, you know, Finn Balor or Damian Priest, or is this a long putt for WWE that pays off later on?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a good question. There's almost kind of part of me that hopes that, I don't want to say like it's like a one final run for Edge or something, but at least that's kind of how they're framing it, because in that vignette, again, if this is all about Edge, in that vignette, there's references to all of his greatest opponents. I mean, The Undertaker, Christian, Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero. And
yep.
So I feel like it's to try and, you know, build up that legend credibility and come back and have like one last major run at the top. I mean, maybe he wins the WWE title or Undisputed title and, you know, he gets thrown into all of that too. Cause I mean, that's certainly believable, mm-hmm. with his stance in the company and I almost said country, with his stance in the company and where he is on the roster. So, I mean, that could certainly make sense. I would kind of hope that if that was the case, it would be a bit more of a long-term thing with where we see these vignettes kind of show up, maybe not every week, but every, you know, other week or something like that. I don't think that's going to be the case. WWE doesn't, very rarely do they do that unless I can't even think of his name, the guy, Amir Vahan, you know, they
yeah.
said he was coming, you know, coming soon for how long? So other than like, you know, those random one-offs, you know, it's not, they don't normally do that long playoff. It's kind of like a short term kind of a thing. So my guess would be they'd do the reveal either right before SummerSlam, at SummerSlam, or right after would be my best guess. Anyway, I don't know exactly when they'd do it or when the best time would be, but I don't know necessarily if he would. I don't know if I'd necessarily even want to see him go after Finn Balor and Damian Priest, and just because again. The whole association with Judgment Day, just there, it's not a, I don't know, maybe that could also be a way to bring Judgment Day up too.
Sure.
You know, that could
yep.
certainly be a way to do it. The more I think about that, I guess that would make the most sense is, you know, kind of build him up, give him a different character that every, you know, turn him face again, have him go against Judgment Day. Even if they lose against Edge, they can still, you know, build some more momentum and or something like that, but at least give them something for people to kind of latch onto and something that doesn't suck.
There you go. There you go. We're not asking much here. We're not asking.
No, not much. Not much.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not brain surgery here.
Right. Right. Ryan from Maryland, you are up next. Thank you for holding. Looking forward to hearing what your three questions are here, man. Thanks for calling. What do you think of the show, Ryan?
Hey, this is a fine show. My first question is on the Street Profits and Usos match. There's rumors that Sikoa might be brought up as a referee or Sami Zayn. Do you think it's more likely that maybe a tag team specialist might be a referee, like, say, a Shawn Michaels or a Bret the Hitman Hart or a Steve Austin?
Yeah, that's interesting. So they announced tonight that the Street Profits versus Usos Undisputed World Tag Team Championship match at SummerSlam will have a special referee. It really could be anybody. I would kind of lean away from it being Solo Sikoa because I think he's got a ton of potential. And, Nate, you can speak to that here in a second because you're covering NXT on a week-to-week basis. So I don't think it's going to be him. But, man, Nate, I don't know. Like, there's not a name that kind of jumps off the page or in my brain in bright light that go, it's definitely going to be this person. So, you know, Sami Zayn makes a lot of sense. You know, I can totally see that playing out, and I could see him kind of making that entertaining and making that work. The only thing with that is that the match kind of unfortunately takes on a bit of a less serious meaning with Zayn involved right now, because he's kind of this comedy figure in the Bloodline, and I think the Usos and Street Profits have a really kind of good feud going here. So I don't know that I love that idea, but I think if I had to pick, if you're holding me to a choice here, Ryan, I would say Sami Zayn makes sense. But Nate, where are you on who the special referee could be? And talk Sokoa's potential too, whether you think it's for that role or otherwise.
I think they foreshadowed it tonight. It's going to be R-Truth. He's the certified tag team specialist. And we know he's a certified referee. He showed us tonight.
We saw the certificate. Absolutely.
No. So as far as Solo Sikoa goes, this is something we keep talking about this on PWT.NXT. Ryan, I know you know. We keep talking about Solo Sikoa going up to the main roster, and it's one of these things where I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, because out of just about everybody on the roster, he is one of the most polished in the ring, out of the ring. He's got great mic skills. He's got the look. I mean, he inherited the family genes in the wrestling business.
Definitely.
Hands down. So I feel like he is already a product that you can pluck right out of developmental, put on the main roster, put with the Bloodline, and he's going to flourish, like, hands down. No problem at all. I still think he's got some time left down in NXT personally. He's going into a couple new feuds right now. So he has a few things going on. Granted, it isn't unlike WWE to have, a feud kind of still going on down in developmental down in NXT, and then have them still have somebody go up to the main roster at the same time and kind of finish the feud down in NXT and then, fully transition to the main roster. It's happened before. It could certainly happen again. But I kind of lean away from Solo Sikoa as well. It's certainly in the realm of possibility, and if it happened, I wouldn't be like super surprised, but I don't think it's going to be. I honestly don't know. Sami Zayn's the only one that's coming to my mind, and I'm with you. I don't know if I necessarily like it. It would really all depend on what version of Sami Zayn we got. Excuse me one sec. But yeah, it would all depend on what kind of version of what Sami Zayn what Sami Zayn we got. If he's still kind of playing this, he's obviously still going to be this overly delusional character. But I guess it depends on how does he turn the dial up to 11, or does he only turn the dial up to 7?
Right.
Because if it's only maybe up to 7, it might be a little bit a better of an outcome, and wouldn't seem as comedic and take away from things. But I don't know exactly who it could be. Those two certainly come to mind. But it could also be somebody like, Rikishi, part of the Bloodline, yeah. Technically, they could do something like that. I don't know if as I say it, I don't know if I'm super over the moon about that either, but, they could certainly go in that direction, pull somebody else in from the family, if it wasn't Solo Sikoa. But those two certainly could be it. But outside of that, I don't know. It's still kind of a mystery. Or maybe even Paul Heyman. Maybe they throw him in as the special guest ref,
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting little an interesting booking choice to kind of have that there. I'm sure the thought process was, hey, we need, something extra to go with here. And I guess I kind of would just disagree with that premise. I think they had a good feud. I think the match was really good at Money in the Bank and, on a very, very big stage of SummerSlam, just put two of your best tag teams in the ring and let them go. So that's how I would have gone with that. Tonight, that angle, Nate, how do you grade tonight's angle, on the entertainment scale, but also on the, hey, this helped, further the story between the Usos and Street Profits scale?
It was definitely entertaining. I'd say probably about a 6 or 7 on each.
Okay.
You know, it kind of makes sense. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, the Street Profits are, they're a phenomenal tag team, as are the Usos. But yeah, I think that kind of is really where I'm at. Like probably at least, on that scale, probably like a 6 or 7.
Okay. Yeah, I'm right there too, I think. Yeah, I think I would have liked to see him lean more serious, but that's kind of my default all the time on most things. So, take that with a grain of salt. Ryan, back to you for your second question of the night.
My second question is on Theory and pushing that he's the youngest Money in the Bank winner. Do you see him doing something else that he's going to be the youngest ever, like winning King of the Ring or win that title, be like the youngest champion of something else?
Now, Nate, what do you think?
It would not surprise me at all if they started doing that. I've kind of heard, been reading some things and some other people bringing that up too, just like on Reddit and whatnot, of them potentially doing something like that and making him the youngest WWE champion, Intercontinental champion, whatever. It wouldn't surprise me because as long as they stay on the Austin Theory train, they seem to be pushing him to the moon, trying to make him like the next face of the company. At least it's the direction they seem to be going. If they stay on that trajectory, then yes, I think that probably makes sense. If not, then, obviously we'll see where that goes. But I think I think that makes the most sense. I think that's probably where I'm at.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, look, WWE likes that kind of stuff. They like to add that type of, seasoning on how they promote their stars. And so, they can't do it with everybody, but man, they'll search for anything like that to kind of, brand their talent. And so, they're already doing it with the Money in the Bank. They'll certainly do it with the Universal Championship if and when he wins that. And I think my answer, Ryan, is any time that they'd be able to do that, they will. I don't know that they'll go out of their way to book him into those situations, but I think they will find they'll find whatever's out there and lean that way. Back to you, Ryan.
And my third question is on Omos. Do you think that he is the most likely person to be drafted to SmackDown, or do you see somebody else that's more likely than him? Because I think he's sort of lost in the shuffle now doing six-man tags with R-Truth.
Yeah, that's a good question. Nate, I feel like I'm higher on Omos than most people. And it's not because I think he's like, this great worker or even a great big man worker. Like I don't think we're seeing, Andre the Giant 2.0 here, or the Big Show 2.0 here. I don't think he's on that level, not yet. But I think that he adds something to the overall show, to like just break up the show a little bit in terms of like the talent that are out there. Like he stands out in that way. If you're looking at, oh man, this guy can't wrestle, like the match that I want to see him wrestle, then I can see why you'd be very turned off by him. But I think he brings a certain presence. I mean, his size is unbelievable. I was in the building for Hell in a Cell, and he's huge. Like he's absolutely enormous. There's a presence that comes along with that. I don't know how much higher his ceiling is right now. Like he is lost in the shuffle. I think he can definitely be a guy who can be, put into a world title challenger spot just because of his size, and if he's built the right way, that can't happen within, a year or more probably. And you really would have to very much push him and protect him, and you frankly need to see something back from him as well in terms of delivery on that stuff. But I like the kind of just the fresh take that he brings to the wrestling shows. That he looks so different. He's so much bigger that it's kind of jarring in a good way, and it just kind of makes you go, oh, okay, you know, it's not, this is, this doesn't have to feel like the same guys out there and over and over. Here's a bit of a change. So I think he's right where he should be right now, Ryan. Nate, what do you think, and do you think he's got a higher ceiling, and or am I just completely insane and he's the worst?
Well, I wouldn't say he's the worst. I'm not that quite that high on him personally. So yeah, he's certainly got a look. He's got a presence about him, and he's definitely different than everybody else. I mean, I think pretty much within the company for the most part, well, not even for the most part, period. So, I mean, there's certainly that. He's got that, the airport factor, you know, where everybody,
right,
you walk to the airport, everybody turns their heads. So he's certainly got the look. His in-ring work definitely leaves something to be desired. You don't need to be the best wrestler in the world to be a monster, though. I mean, especially like, I mean, Andre in his later years and things like that. My problem is Braun Strowman was just so much better as a big monster, and they kind of replaced Omos, or they replaced Strowman with Omos, and because, you know, you can only have one big monster at a time, right?
Yeah, you couldn't possibly have two on two brands. No,
I know. Like, how, like, what a crazy thought. And, I mean, you know, Strowman, he was better on the mic. He was better in the ring. He could move better. I mean, and you know, for a dude, what is he, 7'3", Omos, 7'3", 7'4", whatever they're billing him at. For somebody that big, I mean, he still moves quick, but he's not Braun Strowman. He's not somebody that's as charismatic. And that's really part of it, too, is he has – anything that they allow him to show, I mean, he's just so stoic. And when he does get excited, right, you know, and kind of starts yelling and screaming, it's just very like, ah, and he throws his hands up in the air, you know. There's really – what's the gimmick other than I'm really big, you know? What's going to make people want to buy shirts, or, you know, if he does have a baby face run, whatever, right? Like – what's going to kind of drive sales for this particular character? That's where I'm at with him. Can he improve? I'm sure he probably can. At this current stage, I don't feel like he has like a ceiling like the great Khali or anything like that. I can see them putting him in the title picture for, you know, for the reasons that you said. He's a monster. He's huge. He's imposing. Like, oh my God, how is Roman Reigns going to topple this guy, right? I mean, so it could certainly make for a storyline or something, but I don't think he could carry the company as the champion, you know what I mean?
No.
And at least now, I mean, like you said, if they were to do that, I mean, it would have to be like a year or two down the line, you know, to put him in that title picture, whatever. Like, there's no way I would do that anywhere in the near future. Yeah, I'm not super high on him. I feel like he's, I mean, how many big, huge, muscly dudes came through the company in like the mid to late 2000s, and they never amounted to anything. I know that it's not the same thing here because he is different with the size and everything, but I kind of feel like that's what he is he's just kind of this flash in the pan big guy that's probably going to be gone in a year or two because he hasn't improved. Mm-hmm. I hope he proves me wrong. But that's where I feel what I, you know, kind of like my thoughts on him. And I haven't really enjoyed a single match he's been in, I'll be honest, that I've seen.
He's not going to be a guy that WWE like, you know, attaches the company to and says, go. I think his absolute, like, if in 18 months he has a match against, Cody Rhodes on Raw or on a B-level pay-per-view with a title on the line and does the favors for Cody. Like, I think that's pretty much it, you know, like a B version or maybe even like a C version of Kane, right? Like, not the guy you're going to attach a ship to, but somebody that can go up and down. I think that would be like a sign of like, okay, he kind of reached his potential, but he's not going to be somebody that you put the fate of the company in, at least not right now. I think that's a good point. Ryan, back to you for your final question of the evening.
Okay, my final question is people have been getting on this Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match. Is there anybody that you would prefer that they would have fought at SummerSlam, say like Bobby Lashley against Roman Reigns or Walter against Brock Lesnar? Is there a better match than that?
So I would have gone with the Riddle match, to be honest. That's what I would have done. I would have held off on doing that match on SmackDown and just doing it at SummerSlam. And I get why you wouldn't want to, just because Riddle is not at this point anyway, like been like a marquee guy. It's a huge show. It's going to be a really busy weekend for WWE and wrestling in general. And, you know, Riddle's involvement in that would be very, very new for WWE. When you look at, you know, those big, you know, stadium shows that they do, I mean, Vince McMahon anchors those with guys he knows and guys he knows that can deliver, because there's big stakes there. So my guess is that that's why they didn't do that match there. But that's what I would have done. I think I would have just chalked it up to, okay, there's been injuries galore. Reigns negotiated a new contract for himself where he's not around all the time. Riddle's kind of hot, and he's, you know, we've done the Bobby Lashley thing with Reigns before. This is fresh. Yeah, it's new. Yeah, it's a risk. But hey, let's go with it. And we've got other matches that we know can deliver, Bianca and Becky, you know, and a variety of others. So that's what I would have done, Nate. But what about you?
So I think, you know, Riddle certainly comes to mind. Austin Theory is also somebody that comes to mind too, whether he cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase or didn't win the Money in the Bank briefcase after all, and, you know, had some sort of a feud to you know, bring him in against Roman Reigns. You know, something could have done. The other one, and this is kind of a tough, it's kind of a tough sell, I guess, because in a way it would kind of be heel versus heel, but I think they could probably do it in a way to pull it off, would be to let Ciampa go nuts. And I mean, he was so good as the top guy down in NXT. He's a phenomenal talent. And as a top guy, I mean, man, you bought into him. You believed him, you know, both as a face and a heel. I mean, he was beloved down in NXT. Still is. I'm sure if he was to show up tomorrow, the place, the roof would blow off the place. So it's kind of, like I said, it's a weird one, but I feel like Ciampa's somebody that could really step up. Like I'm looking up and down the roster right now, and you know, like, you know, somebody else that sticks out is Edge. You know, they could certainly do that. We kind of talked about that earlier tonight. Kevin Owens is also somebody that kind of, you know, he's somebody that, you know, you're just talking about, you know, kind of move up and down the card. You know, somebody like Kane, Kevin Owens, somebody like that, they could, you know, go to that. But everybody else that I'm looking at up and down the roster, you know, Seth Rollins is another one too, but, you know, either are already involved in something else or are, you know, they're injured. So it's like, Ciampa's the one that really sticks out to me as somebody that on the main roster is underutilized, and you could easily put him in the main event scene. Let him kind of, you know, be that old Ciampa character, or develop a new character for that matter, you know, that he gets behind and latches onto. But I think so, he's definitely somebody that could step up and really help carry the company right now where there are just so many injuries.
Yeah, well said. Ryan, thank you very much. Great questions and topics as usual. Always good to talk to you, man. Have a good evening. Good night.
Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for making it, man. Talk to you soon. All right, and Nate, we will finish up the caller portion of the show here with Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, thanks for holding. What did you think of Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, so what I want to really get into is the women with Bianca and Becky and all that. To me, a lot of people keep saying that overall it's bad to say that Liv's going to lose the championship to Ronda, which is, I think, is pretty stupid to me. Why have her with the briefcase and have her cash in? She's going to lose that at SummerSlam. But that's how I feel about Bianca Belair. Bianca's the one who hasn't been all that interesting to me, because ever since WrestleMania, I mentioned this before, Bianca's has been very cold as champion, as well as the SmackDown Women's Champion last year as well. She's very cold. I don't know what it is. She just hasn't been. She doesn't wow me as a character. Her character is just very boring and plain. And if Becky Lynch is over. Becky Lynch, who's not the champion, who is the top star of the company, if she gets more bigger reactions than Bianca Belair herself, then that's viewed as a problem. And Liv Morgan is getting a bigger reaction, I think, than Bianca Belair herself. I think that's the problem. And so they either need to have Becky take the title away from her at SummerSlam or turn Bianca Belair heel. One of the two things has to happen because this has been going on for almost the entire year at this point since WrestleMania till now, because if you also think about it, the only reason why Bianca and Becky face each other in general is because of righting a wrong at SummerSlam. Ever since that happened, Bianca's been cold. That's the only reason why Bianca's the champion to right a wrong at SummerSlam. So at this point, I just say just to put the title back on Becky. I know people may not like it, but it's better than Bianca at this point, in my opinion. And I will not take the title off of Liv Morgan because I keep hearing that too. I think that's a big mistake. But I don't just that they'll say, but the comparisons, I just have to make that because it is very, very clear how they're booking. Because also that thing too, Becky is main eventing Raw a lot than Bianca. So that tells you right there that they care more about Becky Lynch than they do Bianca Belair. And I know how the fans feel. The fans think Bianca's great. I do too. I think Bianca's fantastic, but she's not interesting. So she could be a great wrestler if she wants to, but if she's not interesting, why is she the champion? That's just my opinion about it. I know everybody probably don't see it the same way, but that's how I feel. That's how I've been feeling for the majority of the year.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, Kyle, I think there's two things going on like at the same time, like and I think, you know, one of them is, hey, we want Bianca Belair to have a run. Well, yeah, they've got injuries, no question. But you know, I think they do want Bianca Belair to have a run with the title. I think she's a really valuable star for them. And at the same time, they're also, I think, you know, on the slow burn to this Becky Lynch kind of redemption story, you know, kind of culminating with Ronda Rousey. And for that story to work, at least the way things are going right now, I just don't think you can put the title on her. And I don't think that means that she's not getting attention, because like you said, she's been in main events and she's in prominent segments. She's on a show every week. She's talking.
That's my problem. That's my problem, though. She is getting attention and she's not the champion. That seems kind of it takes away from Bianca at this point, and it has been, she's been an afterthought. If Becky has been the highlight for the last few weeks, I think that's my problem.
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the kind of the muddy water that they created for themselves, because yeah, you have this story going on, but Becky's such a star that you just run the risk of her overshadowing. And I think she has to some extent. And Nate, I also think the opponents for Belair, you know, clearly something with Rhea Ripley was planned. And so, you know, you have to look at this through that lens. But, you know, if you take that lens away and you just look at it, like Bianca Belair has not had like a great slate of opponents, you know, coming out of WrestleMania. Becky Lynch at SummerSlam, if that gets the green light, is obviously good. Go ahead, Kyle.
What I just realized as well, because I remember if Rhea never gotten hurt, I truly believe she was going to take the title off of Bianca in general. So I think either way, whether it was going to be Becky or Rhea, I think she was going to lose the championship either at Money in the Bank or probably at Summer. So that's just how I feel, because I thought that way even when she was treating with Rhea. I just felt like she was going to lose the championship. I still feel that way. So that's my opinion about Bianca. She's just been stale, at least for me. And I thought it would have been either Rhea or Becky to take the title off of her, so that's how I felt about it. When Rhea never got into her,
yeah,
but,
Nate, chime in on the discussion here, because there's, you know, I think there's a lot to juggle with what's going on right now, and I think as we talked about earlier in the show, Bianca has, you know, felt a little flat. A good reaction, solid star, no question about it, but you know, just not quite the focus. And, you know, maybe she should be. But, you know, are you as cold on her as Kyle is, or are you okay with kind of those two top stories simultaneously taking place, even if one may be taking from the other?
So I don't know if I'm quite as cold on it, but I'm kind of sort of there. So, I mean, there are so many times in the company where they're like, I mean, CM Punk comes to mind, where, you know, he was this top, you know, top champion. I mean, he was, you know, WWE champion, and the company still had him kind of either in, you know, the mid card or upper mid card. And they had all these other storylines going on above him. It and there's been countless other examples in the past where the champion just hasn't felt as important as they probably should be as champion. And that's kind of where I feel like she is they're still giving her time and, you know, making her feel somewhat important, but there's also other things going on too, like, you know, with Becky Lynch and all of that, it kind of does make it feel like it's less important than these other characters. And sometimes, I mean, there are obviously exceptions to the rule, you know, where, you know, you might have like a special attraction that's going to be a little bit more important than your championship match or whatever. But generally, at least as far as I like my wrestling, I feel like the champion should be the most important thing on the show, whether it's a, you know, women's champion, men's champion, because if not, what the hell are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you there? You know, it's, if the championship isn't the most important thing, like, and you're fighting for something else, like it just, that's not what the sport's all, you know, this fake sport is all about. It's trying to get the championship technically. So that's kind of where I'm at. Yeah, I wish they did put a little bit more focus on her. Like I said, she's still getting TV time. She's still getting some focus and stuff. The other thing with Bianca Belair is, I mean, she has a character that works. Don't get me wrong. But she's been doing the same character since NXT. I mean, it's there really hasn't been a whole lot of evolution for Bianca Belair. There certainly has been to some point, but it's been an evolution of, like, the same character. So I feel like that might also be kind of part of it too, is she's just been doing the same thing for so long. It does feel a little stale to people. They want her to switch it up a little bit. I mean, you know, like for instance, Bayley, you know, I loved Bayley as, you know, the hugger. And then, you know, it kind of fizzled out a little bit. She slashed all of her wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube men and became this like the best version of Bayley. You know, I don't know if you know, something like that is due for Bianca Belair, whether, you know, a heel turn or some major turn, you know, with her character. But I think she needs something to freshen the character up a little bit to make her feel, I guess, fresh again. Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where they go. You know, I definitely am higher on what they're doing with her than you guys seem to be, while acknowledging that she's kind of the second story on Raw right now. So, you know, you guys did a nice job making your cases. That's for sure. But Kyle, back to you. Any other final comments tonight?
Going back to that, I just think too, is that, you know, with her whole character is a heel. That's what her character is, but somehow she made it work as a baby face, but it's been redundant, has been really old. And I just think I watched Becky, and though I'm granted part of it is me being a bigger fan of Becky Lynch than I am Bianca. So maybe I'm being a little bit, being overly favoritism over this, but I just watch her and like, oh my God, someone's doing some good work. I even watch what Liv Morgan is doing. She seems so genuine as champion and feels fresh. Or SmackDown, I'm glad she's over there too. Makes SmackDown better with the women's division. And so I just like, man, Liv Morgan is even more interesting than Bianca Belair. So it's like I said, she either needs to lose the title or become a heel. The last thing I'll talk about is Roman Reigns still is, I'm still want Seth Rollins to take the title away from Roman Reigns again. Why would they do the match at the Royal Rumble and in a disqualification and never go back to it. We will go in Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar again. This is so annoying and not. I've been watching their feud since I was 18. I don't want to see this again. I'm sick of it. So, will they ever go back to Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns at all to do that match and have Rollins become champion, because he has been the most interesting heel on Raw and been awesome as well. We're just going to put it on Theory and see what he does. And Rollins is just a person who just gets beat by Cody Rhodes and then means nothing ever since this entire year just started. Because remember too, when he first became number one contender back in November, supposed to face Big E for the championship at Day One, turned into a five-way. Then after that, he just got screwed over, the whole Cody Rhodes stuff, and then the Roman Reigns stuff, and then he's just not been the vocal point, and Reigns has been holding both championships hostages. So when are they ever going to do Rollins and Reigns again, or if they're old, they're never going to do it again and just treat Rollins like he doesn't matter? But I'll leave you with that. Thanks for a call.
Thanks for making it, Kyle. Great to talk to you as always. Yeah, I mean, yes, I think they will go back to that at some point, for sure, Kyle. I think at some point they will. There's just always a baked-in story there, Nate, you know, as far as the Shield stuff and the fact that, you know, Rollins has this record over Reigns. So, I mean, yes, I think they'll definitely go back to it. What do you think, Nate?
Oh, I absolutely think they'll go back to it. I mean, the only way they wouldn't is if for some reason one of them either leaves the company or retires, you know, the near future. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's so much history there between the Shield and then everything that happened after the Shield. And so I think it's something that they're trying to, I don't know if it's necessarily they're trying to keep them apart from one another or if it's just kind of they're doing it, just they're having them do other things. But in a way, I feel like it's kind of smart to keep them apart for so long, because then when you do come back to it, it's going to be like, oh, my God, here we go. You know, it should kind of build some more intrigue and whatnot. The last thing I'll say on this whole thing is all this talk about Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch. I really want to, in kayfabe, sit down with the two of them for dinner in character, because that would be amazing.
Oh my gosh. You know, we have this YouTube, channel now. And we would definitely need to put that dinner on YouTube. Just one camera. That's it. No edits.
For sure.
Fly on the wall type thing. So when you get that booked, Nate, let me know.
Sounds good. I'll keep you posted.
Okay, good. All right, Nate, we'll hit some emails here. But before we do, talk a little bit about PWT Talks NXT. And, you know, I think, like, there's a pretty – look, I don't know that I'd classify any NXT 2.0 episode, like, supremely important. But you've got Roxanne Perez – challenging for the title. I think she's shown a lot of promise, and I think she's kind of just right up the alley of what WWE looks for in a babyface for their women's division. I think it's a pretty big match for, you know, NXT 2.0 and for both Mandy Rose and Roxanne Perez. So talk a little bit about that too, but also how can people hear more of you throughout the week and all about the show. And then we've got a couple of emails here that we'll finish off with tonight.
Sure. So first on the match coming up with Mandy Rose and Roxanne Perez. So I feel like you kind of hit the nail on the head with Roxanne Perez in terms of, like, she is exactly what the company is looking for. She's relatively new with the company. She's, you know, wrestling on the indies as Roxy. She's adapted to WWE, you know, the WWE style, like, very well. A couple slip ups here and there, but I mean, for the most part, she's really been a ray of sunshine down in NXT 2.0. I haven't been super high on the stuff she's been doing with Cora Jade, but that's another story for another day. As far as, like, the match with Mandy Rose, I'm certainly looking forward to it. Mandy I've kind of been higher on Mandy than I think some, at least higher on it than Kelly Wells, my co-host on PWT Talks NXT.
Well, nobody cares what he says anyway.
Yeah, nobody cares what Kelly thinks anyway.
just kidding, Kelly.
I'm not. maybe a little bit. But, you know, she's. I feel like when she went down to NXT, I almost feel like she needed it because – Now, granted, I love the stuff she did with Otis, and that was probably the only thing that Mandy Rose ever did that I really liked, you know, and can even really remember for that matter. I remember her tag team with Sonya Deville, but, like, other than that, that's really the biggest thing that sticks out in my mind before she went back down to NXT. Now, I really feel like she's kind of come into her own with this character. She buys it, believes it. And even, you know, and her matches have certainly improved. She's still not the greatest in the ring, but she's definitely improved in the ring since being down there. So I feel like she's been a great champion. So going up against somebody like, you know, a new scrappy, you know, babyface like Roxanne Perez is an intriguing match. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm kind of torn on which way I think it's going to go, which way I want it to go. Because there's part of me that doesn't think Mandy Rose – like her reign's over yet. And also there's part of me that doesn't think Roxanne Perez is necessarily ready for a title shot. The NXT women's title at least at one point was like the most protected title in the company. So like, I still kind of think with that mindset, like, you know, who do I want to see on that list of champions for that title? Mandy Rose is not somebody I would necessarily have thought of, but I feel like she's had a pretty strong run as champion. And I don't know. I haven't seen enough from Roxanne Perez because she's still so new to the company. If I feel like she can necessarily be that champion, part of me thinks they are going to pull the trigger on it and switch the titles and put the title on Roxanne Perez. She's been really, I mean, she's been hyped up quite a bit. They've given her a lot of TV time. They've told us a lot about her. So it kind of feels like they're building up to something big for her. But at the same time, it also wouldn't surprise me if she comes like super, super, super close to winning it and then doesn't last minute, you know, Toxic Attraction interferes or what have you. But there's some reason she doesn't wind up winning it. So it still kind of gives her some credibility, but she doesn't end up actually winning the title and Mandy can kind of keep things going, you know, with her reign. I'm torn between those two, you know, which way it's going to wind up going. But overall, definitely looking forward to the match and what the, you know, the two of them are going to do. And if you do want to talk to us a little bit about it, you can find us on PWT Talks NXT on the Daily Cast lineup. The recorded show comes out, I believe it's you know, later in the day on Wednesday, sometimes early Thursday. But we go live about 20 minutes after NXT. You can find the link. Usually I'll post it on Twitter, but you can call in 515-605-9345, or you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com to be part of the conversation when we go live tomorrow night and every Tuesday night. And I also write the NXT hits and misses, which you can find on pwtorch.com, which, yeah, like I said earlier in the night, I try to get up before we go on the air for PWT Talks NXT. And you can check those out to see what I thought of the show.
Very good. Good teaser analysis for what you guys bring every single Tuesday night. Great stuff. Okay, we'll go to the mailbag here. We'll start with Zach in Texas. He says, gentlemen, I watched exactly one segment of Raw tonight, the women's title match, and not because I expected a good match, but to see what happened with Becky Lynch. She cut a predictably good promo and then immediately undercut the whole thing by getting involved in the match for no explicable reason. Her interfering did not benefit her in any way. What are we doing here? I thought Money in the Bank was Becky's rock bottom, and we're going to finally be on the road to ending this misguided, interminable heel run, making her the babyface that she belongs as. Now it seems we're either headed toward the triple threat. If we're lucky, Becky Lynch versus Bianca. If it's the latter, but then what? Bianca just beats Becky again? Does that really elevate Bianca more? Where does that leave Becky? She may be doing the best with the material given to her. But having a baby face of her caliber with her organic connection with the fans continue to be a heel is going to have diminishing returns. Thank you, Zach. So, Nate, I'll direct you to kind of that first part here in particular. So I want to get your thoughts on that. It's a good point. It's a good point. Like, Becky kind of spewed a lot, pretty much commanded a title shot anyway, but then is kind of getting involved and muddying her own waters as far as the title situation goes. So I think it's a good point by Zach. You kind of felt something was off when you watched the angle, but I didn't really think about it more than that. But I think I probably should have. I think Zach's onto something here.
I wasn't muted, and I just muted myself. All right.
the reverse mute.
Yes, gotta love it. Gotta love it. It's been a while since I've had a mute malfunction, but or I guess it's more of a me malfunction. To be honest, I really didn't think more about it either. I thought it was kind of a dumb finish. You know, made Bianca Belair look kind of stupid, but. Yeah, I really didn't think about it really more beyond that. But I think he might be onto something there. I'd have to think about it a little bit more. I'm kind of coming up with a little bit of a blank here to kind of continue on with it. But I mean, he could certainly be onto something. It makes sense.
I think the three of us collectively gave more thought to that finish than they probably did. Because it really, like, probably. When you do break it down the way Zach did, like, it doesn't make a lot of sense other than, you know, we need an escape hatch. We're WWE. We do this all the time. So we're going to just do what we want. And I don't think it makes sense. And I think, you know, fortunately for them, Becky's pretty Teflon. And I think this will be a distant memory, Zach, when after the SummerSlam match happens. So, yeah, I think it's classic WWE booking, and that's not a compliment.
It's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. All right, we will wrap up the show here with JB in Detroit. He goes, hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Do you think that Randy Orton is the best thing that could have happened to Riddle? He's always incredibly over with the crowd, with the threat of the RKO, draping DDT, or just simply using Randy Orton gestures to the crowd. My question is, how long will he be bearable to sustain this moment, and should Orton be out a significant amount of time with injury? Is this part of his act something that he can keep indefinitely, or is there a shelf life to it? JB talking about Riddle adopting Randy Orton's kind of moveset. I think that Randy Orton is the best thing that could have happened to Riddle on the main roster, aside from, you know, just being pushed to the moon and beating Roman Reigns. I mean, Riddle, if you remember back, guys, when Riddle came to that main roster, it was lean into the stoner thing, act really dopey and just really kind of childish. It was all just directed nowhere. It had no context around it. It just was kind of happening, and it didn't have anything around it that mattered. And Randy Orton's involvement really changed that. Not only did Riddle have somebody to play off of, but Orton is overly credible in the WWE ecosystem. So attaching himself to that worked. They also then just found chemistry with one another as well. And I think that accentuated, like, the positives of Orton and the positives of Riddle. And they were both able to kind of hide weaknesses, especially on Riddle's side. And, you know, the kind of stoner dopiness that Riddle brought to the table played better when you had somebody else react to it instead of just living on its own. So I think Randy Orton was a godsend for Riddle. I don't think Riddle would have had a nice run without Orton. And I think he's turned himself into a guy, Nate, that can be a top tier act for the company when they need him to be. So this is that Randy Orton thing is a thumbs up. As far as how long he can keep it going, that's a more complicated question. I don't think he has too much left with it, and certainly not when Orton comes back. But your take.
So I think he can probably keep it going until, excuse me, until Orton comes back. At least either until he comes back or shortly thereafter. But I mean, it definitely has a shelf life. I mean, he can't just be doing this forever. I mean, unless they're a tag team until Randy Orton retires and then he just kind of makes it part of a shtick. But I don't know. I can't see that happening. I feel like at some point he definitely needs to drop it and kind of become his own character again. You know, and kind of lean off of things that aren't already associated with somebody else. I mean, it's fine for right now. And I mean, it's entertaining. I love it personally. Mm-hmm. But it certainly does have a shelf life and it's not something that's going to be sustainable long-term, you know, for the character. What was the other part of the question? I'm blanking on it.
Just whether or not Randy Orton was, the best thing that ever happened to Riddle on the main roster.
That's right. Yeah. And yes, I think so. And you know, one of the things that you brought up is, when Riddle was doing, you know, that whole stoner gimmick, it just kind of seemed like it wasn't really going anywhere. There was the same thing down in NXT. It was kind of that stoner gimmick, and it was funny, but it didn't really have a whole lot of direction. You know, they were still pushing him and whatnot, but I kind of felt like the character was falling flat. Like there was a lot of hype around him, but I didn't fall into that hype quite right away with him. Like I liked him, but I didn't quite get it. And then he teamed up with Pete Dunne and he formed the Broserweights. And oh my God, all of a sudden he was my favorite thing. Like him and Pete Dunne, or I guess now Butch, was like my favorite thing on NXT. They were hilarious together. They played off each other like amazingly. And I feel like, I don't know if the Broserweights was kind of the impetus for, you know, Orton and Riddle to get together or whatever, but there's a lot of parallels there, you know, kind of the funny man and the straight man thing. But he definitely plays off of somebody else better than he does alone. So it's like, I don't know if he should necessarily be like, there's part of me that thinks he should be a tag team guy going forward. Or at least a singles competitor that's affiliated with somebody, you know, whether they're like a mm-hmm. faction or something like that. Because he does, he has a lot. When he's playing off of somebody else, his charisma comes out more. He's much more, I don't want to say he's more animated because he's always animated, but his character just works better. And I think he's more comfortable, at least that's the way it comes across when he has somebody else to play against. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. Thank you, JB. Appreciate it. Nate, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks so much to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Again, we'll be on the VIP side of things later this week to talk Monday Night Raw, pwtorch.com/govip. I'm PW Torch, assistant editor to Zach Hador, and you can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show on the Canvas. It's a show that is kind of rooted in talking about the art of wrestling. So check that out. It usually drops Thursdays or Fridays most weeks. But a show that's strictly talking about the art of wrestling. In addition to that, guys, just make sure you're making pwtorch.com a stop for your wrestling fix on a day-to-day basis. We've got all the show reports for all the major wrestling shows throughout the week. We've got hits and misses columns like Nate's for every show. We've got news updates. We've got editorials and so much more. So make pwtorch.com part of your day. And check us out on YouTube as well. We've got a lot going on YouTube. Daily news updates, weekly kind of flagship shows with myself and Tyler Sage. We have an interview right now up with Impact World Champion Josh Alexander that I did at the end of last week. And he is great in that interview. He goes in-depth on what it means to him and what the pressures are like of being a world champion for Impact Wrestling. So a fascinating interview there that you can check out over on YouTube. Just search PW Torch on YouTube and you'll find us, like our videos and subscribe to the channel. And we'd really appreciate it. Nate, thank you so much, man. Great show as always. It's always a blast talking wrestling with you and hearing, you know, you kind of throw back to NXT. So great stuff. And one more time with your social media for those who would like to follow you and hear more throughout the week.
Yeah, that's well, it's really difficult. It's my name. It's at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. And
you're such a trickster, such a trickster.
I know. Right. But yeah, you can follow me there and keep up with, I'm usually more active like on Tuesdays because talking with about NXT and whatnot. But certainly give me a follow to talk some wrestling.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thanks everybody for listening. For Nate, I am Zach, and we'll catch you guys next time.